All right, welcome to the Free Stretch. JoeBucksFan.com. I'm Bobby Fenton. Final preseason game of the season edition of the show. Brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, like it always is. A little late this week. Sorry, I had my cable and internet knocked out yesterday. But we'll get one in here before Saturday night's game at 8 p.m. in Houston. The only road preseason game of the year. And this will be the one the starters play the most in as far as getting ready for what amounts to 2 weeks until the Thursday night opener. I'm recording this on Friday morning, but 2 weeks from this past Thursday. Bucks, Cowboys, Raymond James Stadium, prime time, the season opener. First time the Bucks will have gotten to do that since they didn't do that sort of thing last time the Bucks won the Super Bowl. But before we get to all that, you know, I want to talk extensively about Titans Bucks last weekend. No, I'm just kidding. there were some good things. I mean, you know, Tryon looked good and some other things, but I literally don't need to talk to you about the game against the Titans, and you don't need to. I'll say this much. First of all, if you were at home just watching the game and you watched the game all the way through, a big fat salute to you. But for those people that were actually still in the stadium and the clock hit triple zeros and they're still in there, to those people, okay, that is a major salute. Or maybe you should all be Baker-acted. It's one or the other, or both. But, I mean, even as preseason goes, that was a tough one. And I don't care that they've won or lost, but just the entire thing. So don't worry, we're not going to talk too much about that one. We'll look forward as the Bucks get ready for Saturday night in Houston. Bruce Arians did say, this is a direct quote from him, quote, "I hope to see what I want to see in the first half." This is regarding the starters playing. He says, "Otherwise, we're going to be playing into the third quarter." So he's looking, you know, this isn't just a throwaway thing. He's looking to see some results, looking to see some production. Haven't seen much from the starters to begin with at all in the preseason. Not that they haven't played well, but just that they literally haven't played much. So we'll see what they can do. I know the Texans are planning on doing the same thing. The Texans are not projected to be very good. I know when people do things in the preseason, other people always jump in to say, oh, well, it's preseason, it's against backups and things like that. And so the Texans, they will have their starters in on Saturday night, and yet the argument probably still applies. That, oh, well, it's the Texans, you can't tell anything. But we're not trying to tell anything. Honestly, we're just hoping everybody gets out there, plays decent, mainly no injuries, and then we'll get ready for next week. And before that, we got to get ready for the cutdown day, which will be Tuesday at 4 p.m. That's when the roster goes from 80, where it is now, to 53. And so we'll talk a little bit about what projects there. There's not much in the way of drama. We obviously know who the main players are going to be, but down the roster there toward the bottom end, maybe five or six spots are in question right now. So we'll get to that and a few other things. The Free Stretch, like it always is, brought to you by our very good friends at Bill Curry Ford. They are always there, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. If you're looking for a car, truck, van, brand new, pre-owned, used, whatever. And it's not just Fords. They got a bunch of stuff, but obviously it's mainly Fords. Any way you slice it, it all amounts to this. You buy a car there. And see, for me, it's not even about the car. You can get cars a lot of places. You buy a car there, you're covered under the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, which means if you have engine trouble or any issues with the car going forward, as long as you still own it and you bought it at Bill Curry Ford, you're covered. Bring it back there to the service center. They will take care of it, period. And that is really cool. Like, that's something, and you can talk to them when you get over there. That's the difference to me that puts them ahead of everybody else. So check that out in person, like I said, at the lot, in the gigantic showroom, or go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And they'll do home delivery for test drives and for purchases, so you don't even have to leave your house or office if you don't want to go. It's all taken care of either way. So thanks to them. In the meantime, looking at this weekend and on into Tuesday's cutdown. So like I said, Bucks are at 80 players. You got to get to 53 players by Tuesday at 4 p.m. Greg Allman, who covers the Bucks for The Athletic, he's their beat writer. The Athletic is a subscription-based service, and we've got great coverage all around. I mean, Rick Stroud with the Tampa Bay Times, if you're a subscriber there, or even just follow on Twitter. Same with Greg Allman with The Athletic. In addition, of course, to the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio for Bucks coverage, which is JoeBucksFan.com. But it's all covered. But Greg Allman for The Athletic did write a nice piece earlier today, and it kind of details what we're looking at as far as cutdowns and what the actual drama is. And you know, you can go read the piece. I recommend you do. There's 53 guys on the roster, obviously. You've got your specialists, which are Bradley Pinion, Suckup, and the long snapper, who I think is still Treiner. So that's 30, or that's three guys right there. That leaves 50. Sometimes they do 25 offense, sometimes they do 25 defense, sometimes they go 26-24 for offense, sometimes they go 26-24 for defense. That can vary, but it's fairly evenly split with those remaining 50 non-specialist spots. So if you look at the offense first, from what it looks like there, there's really only one spot that isn't. I mean, if you just go down the list of names, we're pretty set with the six wide receivers. Three of the tight ends are set, eight offensive linemen, the four running backs and the three quarterbacks, because it looks like Ryan Griffin probably isn't going to be on the active roster. I don't think they'd carry four. So you add all that up, that's 24. So let's say they go 25 and 25. There's one wild card left. So this is what we talked about last week. Does it come down to Tanner Hudson, the tight end, who always makes tons of plays receiving and is clearly very talented in that aspect? Bruce Arians has said his blocking leaves something to be desired. And does it matter anyway, like with the fourth tight end? The Bucs do use a lot of two tight end sets, as we know. So the argument for a fourth tight end, I guess, is that you're using two quite a bit of the time, and you've had injury issues with your tight ends, and, you know, Gronkowski's older, O.J. Howard's coming off an injury. So maybe it's better to have four. On the other hand, even Brait at number three tight end, they have a hard time getting into the game a lot of the time. So, you know, is there a need for a fourth tight end, or is that need outweighed by a ninth offensive lineman? And you know, obviously, we know they needed depth on the offensive line last year. I mean, we had guys, you know, we had Aaron Stinney playing in, you know, major, major games. And he did well. I'm not saying he didn't do well. I'm just saying they, you know, so that leaves Nick Leverett, who's been playing offensive line. He was on the practice squad with the Bucs all last year. And he can actually play. He's played guard. He's played tackle. I think he took some snaps at center earlier before. So is that something you do? Do you go with another receiver? Travis Johnson's been good. Big body guy, 6'4", can block downfield. And a lot of this comes down, I mean, especially with the tight end thing and the wide receiver thing, it comes down to can they contribute on special teams? How important is that versus a lineman? For the record, Tanner Hudson also does not really play special teams, which for a backup tight end is a big negative. So, you know, I'm not sure he makes it. But either way, that one spot appears to be something that, you know, there's a little bit of drama there. As far as defense, again, there's not a ton of drama. At linebacker, it looks like they think Britt from Auburn there is the number four guy. And, you know, in the actual games, in the preseason games, he's had some ups and downs. But Bruce Arians said he has separated a little bit. So that leaves Grant Stewart and Joe Jones. You know, they have another linebacker on top of that for five. If so, who is it, one of those two guys? In the secondary, Javon Hagan is a safety, along with Antonio Hamilton and Dee Delaney at corner. Maybe one or two of those three maybe makes it. Khalil Davis at DL. You know, again, like I said last week, these aren't major decisions that are going to determine, you know, the outcome of the season. But it's a long season. 53 is not a lot of guys. You look at college football, they got like 95 guys dressed for these games. It's insane how many guys they have dressed. And, you know, I like it better with 53. I think if you're on a team, you should be a part of the team. I don't think you need to have like 30 guys who literally never play. But it's, you know, roster management in the NFL. I mean, coaches will tell you, like, everybody's got to be able to play. Like, there's no guys out there besides maybe the backup quarterbacks who go out there and just put the uniform on and stay on the sideline. Like, you have to be in there in special teams or something because there aren't that many people, and it's a physical game and all that stuff. So it matters. I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but I'm not, you know, terribly hung up on the outcome of these decisions. I'm most interested, I guess, in that offensive final spot to see what they do there. But it's just something to look for as they get down to the final cutdowns on Tuesday after the game on Saturday. Now, as far as the preseason, now that we're doing this for the first time with three games to see how it feels, I gotta say, the first two preseason games have been very bad, okay, even as preseason games go, but that has contributed to me having a bit of a, I don't want to say change of heart, but I've evolved, maybe is the word, a little bit on my thinking in the preseason because, as you know, if you've listened to this show, I am an avowed believer in the 16-game schedule. I don't think they should go to 17, let alone 18. So that's where I'm at. And yet with the preseason, I always say, well, I think they should stay at 16 games. So would you rather have four preseason games or two or three? You know, in my mind, it's not taking the place of a better game. In my mind, it's just, do you like having this extra preseason game or not? Now, they do have an extra regular season game this year to go with the three preseasons. But I could tell you honestly now, even if they didn't add that extra regular season game, and even if they were staying at 16, I think I'd be fine with two preseason games. I used to say any football is better than no football. And I'm not going to argue that, you know, that more football isn't good, but I just could take it or leave it. Like, I am ready for this to be the last preseason game, and it's really nice. Like, think about if we had one more of these to go. It's really nice that we don't. I'm glad this is the last one, and I'm totally fine with college football taking over that weekend. You know, we used to have, like, that Thursday night was always the fourth preseason game. It was always, like, the Thursday night of, like, this coming week. And that also would be, like, the opening Thursday night of college football. And I don't need that fourth one. Yeah, it's fine just lopping that right off. Adding the 17th regular season game, again, we could argue about that. It's not going anywhere now that it's here. But, yeah, I'm not like, I'm okay with, I think two preseason games is really fine. 18 games is something they'll do along with that. But either way, I don't care. I've had enough of the preseason. And I say this every year. Next year, I'll do it again. Next year, I will be out here in July saying, I don't care, just give it to me. Even if it's just preseason, just put some uniforms on, paint the field, put the scoreboard up there, keep clock time, you know, I'll just be dying for it. And then just like every other year, 30 minutes into it, I'll be like, whew, okay, I'm good. Like, let's just, yeah, you know, I don't need any more of this. But for a lot of guys, including and most especially the guys whose names I just mentioned on the bubble for those final roster spots, it's a really big night in their careers and in their lives. So I try to remember that when I'm watching the games, and I try to manufacture the drama that way, thinking, wow, like there's careers on the line tonight, just to, you know, make it interesting in one way or another. But Bucks Houston, Saturday, 8 p.m. There is a storm, Ida, that is headed through the Gulf, or will be after it passes Cuba. That's not expected to factor. It's still going to be out in the water by Saturday, so I don't think it'll change anything with the Bucks and Texans. But for anybody in the Panhandle area, and especially the Gulf Coast, like toward Texas and Louisiana. I've got some family in-laws in Louisiana, and, you know, we're watching that thing closely for all that. But anyway, after Saturday, it'll be time to set our sights on Dallas. And speaking of Dallas, has anybody watched Hard Knocks this year? Because I have not watched a lick of it, and I don't have HBO right now, which I knew, like, you know, earlier in the year, I said to myself, it's okay. I don't have HBO. I'm going to just get it for Hard Knocks. Because I watch Hard Knocks every year. Like, I've seen every episode of Hard Knocks, I think, ever before this season. And then when it came around this year, I said, okay, I need to go get my HBO. You know, just I was just going to get it for a month or two, just for, like, you know, whatever, 10 bucks, just to get Hard Knocks. And then I'd cancel it again. And then the first episode happened, and I'm on Twitter all the time. In fact, you can follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y, at Bobby Game Day. Same thing with my email, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. But I'm on Twitter all the time, and I follow, obviously, lots of football people. So I figured, okay, let me see when the tweets start rolling in, when the first Hard Knocks airs, and then, you know, I'll get a feel for this and you know, see if I need to watch it. I literally, until they showed that drone thing, which was really cool this past week, where they flew a drone through the Cowboys facility, and somebody tweeted that. But before that, I literally did not see one single person that I follow tweet about Hard Knocks. Which, I mean, again, I follow everybody who would possibly, like, in the NFL mediascape. You know, there's no way I would miss that. Nobody's watching it. And I talked to a couple friends who do have HBO, and they were like, oh, yeah, man, this season sucks. It's boring. Like, and I don't know if maybe Hard Knocks is just down this year. I know the Cowboys, everybody thinks they're supposed to be interesting because they're the Cowboys, but they're not any more interesting or less interesting than any other team, really. But maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's just a, I mean, like, you know, the Bucks website now, or not, yeah, the Bucks website, or if you follow the Bucks on Twitter, they put those clips up, and they've got basically Hard Knocks style stuff just all the time. People mic'd up, game, you know, all that stuff. it's kind of the same thing. Like, maybe Hard Knocks, as we know it, no longer carries the gravitas. Maybe it no longer holds the place that it used to hold. I'm not sure. Like, maybe one more season. I know I enjoyed the hell out of it. Not last season. That sucked, too. The season before with the Raiders, with Gruden. See, I think the coach has the most, like having Gruden on there, like, that was great. Like, I loved it. And yet, since then, I last year it sucked, and this season I haven't even watched. So that's our opponent in the opener, the Cowboys. And speaking of the opener, the opening day starter for the New Orleans Saints. I don't know how many of you guys watched Monday Night Football this past week with the Saints hosting the Jags. But it's Jameis Winston, baby, who's going to be out there for the Saints after having a really good preseason. And in particular, on Monday night, he was 9 for 10, 123 yards, threw a couple beautiful touchdown passes, and just generally looked like a starting quarterback, and that's what he's going to be. So, you know, we don't play the Saints right out of the gate. We'll see by the time we get to that point. But I'm intrigued, you know. If you remember the whole to-do about Jameis back here on the free stretch, I was a big defender, not an enabler. I certainly criticized the criticizable things, but I always thought he got a little bit. And before 2019, I definitely thought he got a bad rap. 2019, which was the final straw season, of course, the 30 interceptions, including the last one against the Falcons, which ended up being the last pass he ever threw as a Buccaneer, which was in overtime in Week 17. I still wonder, man, I still wonder what would have happened and how history would have been altered if he didn't throw that one pick. I think we still were moving on from him, but let's say, like, if you remember, the Bucs were, I think they were 7-8, right? And Jameis was going into that game. The Bucs, you know, they had played well down the stretch. They had really improved a lot, and they weren't going to make the playoffs. But, like, I think Jameis was still maybe playing for another contract or a chance to continue to be the Bucs quarterback in Tampa. And even with all that had happened, if he goes out and plays well, and let's say they win that, or were they, I think they were 8-7. That's right. That was, or something like that. They had a chance to have a winning record. Anyway, if he lights it up, Bucs win, he stays under 30 interceptions, throws a couple touchdowns. Do we ever get Tom Brady? Does the whole thing, I mean, what the whole course of not just Bucs history, but NFL history changes? And instead, the Bucs went out, lost that game. Jameis threw more picks, including the last one. And if you remember what I was saying back then, I was trying to talk, not just everybody else, but in some ways myself, into, okay, how can we cut the fat? I remember doing a whole show on let's cut the fat, just like bulking in weightlifting, where you bulk and you have to add some fat to bulk because you have to eat a lot of calories to build the muscle. So you do add muscle, but you add fat. I said, let's bulk. Maybe this was his bulking year, and that meant the yards and the touchdowns, but also the interceptions. And then after we bulk, we cut the fat, we trim, get those interceptions out of there, but we keep the lean muscle. I remember doing a whole thing on that. And let me tell you, Jameis, okay, over the course of his career, 2019 was a bad year for him, but every other year he has been in the top half of NFL quarterbacks. Not elite necessarily, although some of his numbers, I mean, the touchdown and yards numbers are elite, but just overall, taking it, even in the interceptions too, taking it all into effect, he had been pretty good his career up until 2019. 2019, the interceptions just blew up. And it hurt him, obviously, and it hurt the Bucs. Okay, admittedly. But the whole Jameis sucks, he'll never be good narrative is based on 2019 only. Because before that, I'm talking strictly about numbers, not just gut feeling, not just eye test. Advanced stuff, I know some people don't care about the analytics, but you're a fool if you ignore them. He was in the top 10, actually, of NFL quarterbacks for most of that time. So I wasn't surprised to see him do what he did on Monday night. That's a preseason game. That doesn't tell you much, but I'm just saying, I never thought he was going to not be the starter once Drew Brees retired. He has officially been named the starter now. He makes $5.5 million this year, while Taysom Hill makes $10.5 million, by the way. So yet he's the number one. Taysom will still be doing his gadget stuff and all that. I'm not sure if he'll be running down on punt coverage like he has in the past, but maybe he still will. I don't know. But anyway, I'm interested to see it. And when I made all those cases that I made for Jameis, you know, that was before the hot Tom Brady. When it became apparent we might get Tom Brady, and I honestly, my biggest thing with that wasn't not wanting Tom Brady. It was not really believing. I honestly never really believed that this was all going to happen. I still can't believe it's all happened. And once it became apparent, oh, yeah, we can really get Tom Brady, this is real, then hell yes. And obviously that all worked out well. But I still think Jameis can be a decent NFL quarterback. They even ran the comparison on the Monday night game on a graphic showing like all the picks he had thrown and everything else to go with the yardage and the touchdowns. And they showed that, you know, one of the only other guys to have similar numbers like this to start out is Vinny Testaverde, who I think is an interesting comparison. And then they showed after, like, Testaverde's first, whatever it was, 3-4 seasons, and whether you think it's a coincidence or not that both guys had those seasons with the Bucs and then have moved on. You know, Testaverde after that went on to a very prolific, very long career, kept the interceptions in check enough to go ahead and do that, played in an AFC championship game, on and on and on. And so I'm not saying Jameis is going to be in the league for 15 more years, but people forget how young he still is even now. And, I'm interested. And obviously, we don't want him to hurt the Bucs. He is in the division. I'm not saying, I'm rooting for them to go 11-5 or something. But I am interested to see how he does as a starter in New Orleans. And, we don't, again, play them right out of the gate, but further down the line in the season, you know, we'll see how things are going. But it's interesting. It's just an interesting thing. As far as the other things around the league quarterback-wise, Teddy Bridgewater getting the job in Denver over Drew Locke, who Drew Locke was, if you look at what he said, it was on Twitter, but if you have a chance to see the audio, he gave a very, I thought, professional and classy response to not getting that job. But anyway, Bridgewater now makes, for Vic Fangio, who's starting his third season, so he's coached 32 games so far for the Broncos, Bridgewater will be the 7th quarterback in 33 games under Vic Fangio in Denver, which is one shy of the record. I'll give you a second, but since this is a show on Joe Bucks Fan about the Bucks, do you want to guess who the record holder is for the most quarterbacks as a starter used in the first 33 games coaching for a team? It'd be John McKay of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the first 2 seasons and part of a third that the Bucks played. They had 8 starting quarterbacks under John McKay, and I'll go through them real quick because it's fun to think about old school Bucks stuff. So obviously, any Bucks fan knows Steve Spurrier was the first starting quarterback in Bucks history. He went 0-12. Then they started Parnell Dickinson in the 13th game of the first season. He went 0-1. Then Terry Hanratty, he started the final game. Remember, they only played 14 games in 1976, and he lost that, so the Bucks were 0-14. Then they go to season 2. We know they started off 0-26. Randy Hedberg got the first 4 games. He went 0-4. Jeb Blount went 0-4 after that. And then Gary Huff, who was the starting quarterback for the first ever win in Bucks history in New Orleans, he went 2-4 to close out that 1977 season. And even still, to start the 1978 season, Mike Borella, 0-1, and then a guy named Doug Williams came in and went 2-2. And I went more than that, but I'm just talking about the first 33 games. And so the Bucks and John McKay have the record for most starters used under one head coach in 33 games. But Vic Fangio is going to come up one short of that when Teddy Bridgewater starts for Denver on the opening day next, or the week after this week, for the Broncos. So interesting times all around. I'm fired up. Like I tell you guys all the time, this is the best time of year, and we are there because now we've got the actual season dawning here as we get down to the final preseason game Saturday, and then the cuts on Tuesday. We'll rehash all of it next week and see where the final 53 lands. And remember, even after the final 53, then there's still other teams that cut guys that maybe your team wants, so then you take guys that other teams cut instead of the guys you decided on, then it turns over even more. So all that stuff will be happening over the next couple weeks, and we'll get it all straightened out here on JoeBucksFan.com. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, putting me on the best place for Bucks coverage anywhere, and getting me in front of all of you. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the show. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the preseason game. Enjoy Rays baseball and all the other fun pennant races. I'll be back next week. And until then, in the meantime, wherever you are, have a great weekend. Be safe. Have fun. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
to stay. So lonely now, just let me off the top. Set it free. Set it free.